Welcome to week two of playoff action. I'm Kyle, the student of the game, and to my right, it's really effing crowded up in here. For one, I have my co-host, the man who thinks that the NFL fantasy files are real, Weasel, and once again, join us. He's already given us his rankings from afar, because he couldn't make it the other week, but to make up for that, he is here to give us his playoff input. I give you Chris Rankin. Chris, welcome back. Thanks again for coming out.
Thanks for having me.
And, yeah, let's go ahead and get cranking. Last week, the AFC started off the action. This week, the NFC starts off the action on the TV schedule. So, Weasel starts the analysis for us. Weasel, go.
Cardinals running back Tim Hightower ran for a 70-yard touchdown off the first play of the game for the Cardinals offense, but they could not keep up with the offense of the Saints, who scored on their first five or six possessions. The Saints, at home, defeated the Cardinals 45-14 to advance to the NFC Championship game. Drew Brees was 23 of 32, 71%, 247 yards, 3 touchdowns, no INTs. Pretty important stat, not sacked this game.
That's a big deal.
In the receiving game, Marques Colston, 6 catches for 83 yards, 13.8 average with a touchdown. Devery Henderson, 4 for 80, 20-yard average with a touchdown. Tight end Jeremy Shockey, 3 for 36 with a touchdown. Reggie Bush, 4 for 24, and Pierre Thomas had 4 for 18. In the running game, Reggie Bush, 5 rushes for 84 yards, 16.8 average with a touchdown. In the mid-third quarter, Bush ran back a punt return, 83 yards for a touchdown for the Saints' final score of the game. Pierre Thomas had 13 for 52, 4-yard average. Lindell Hamilton had 5 for 23, 4.6 average with a touchdown. Mike Bell had 6 for 11. For the Cardinals, Kurt Warner, 17 of 26, 65%, 205 yards, no touchdowns, 1 INT. He was sacked once. In the mid-second quarter, he had a pass intercepted by defensive end Will Smith. As Warner was in the vicinity of the interception return, defensive end Bobby McRae blocked the crap out of Warner, and Warner had to leave the game.
You know, Matt Millen once said a guy ran the crap out of the football, and now someone blocked the crap out of Millen. Hey, if he can get away with it, why not you? And I also have to give you your props for not using a Big Willie-style joke on the interception by Will Smith.
Leinart finished off the half, but Warner came back in the second half for a shot at a comeback in which the Cardinals were down 35-14, but they With the game out of reach in the mid-fourth quarter, Leinart came back in the game, ended up being 7 of 10 for 61 yards. For the receiving game, Larry Fitzgerald, 6 catches for 77 yards, 12.8 average. Early Doucette had 8 for 68. Steve Reston had 4 for 52. Jeremy Irvin lost a fumble, but had 2 for 34. And Tim Hightower had 3 for 27. For the running game, Tim Hightower, 6 rushes for 87 yards and a touchdown. Without the 70-yard touchdown, he ended up still being 5 for 17, 3.4 average. Still not bad.
Complete statistics, the sight of a great football mind.
Wow. Rookie running back Beanie Wells had 5 for 7, 1.4 average with a touchdown. And Jason Wright and rookie running back LeBron Stevens-Howling combined had 3 carries for 7 yards.
Yeah, as far as all that goes, the complete lack of production by the Cardinals offense is only matched by the complete lack of tackling skill by the Cardinals defense and special teams. I mean, really, these guys were rolling around like, you know, blind porn actors or something rather than actually trying to make a tackle. It was ridiculous.
It was Dominic Rogers of Cromartie and Antoine Roll were out of the game during the, I think it was like late in the second quarter or such, but they were still pressuring. So
yeah, Cromartie really did get knocked out, but I mean, at that point, you know, actually, I will say, I'm not sure if Cromartie would have actually been covering him, but there was a number of times when Marques Colston just simply made a posterize the guy covering him. There were two plays in a row. One of them was called back for a penalty, so the very next play, same play back to Colston, and then the third play resulted in a touchdown. I couldn't tell you if that was what made it 35-14 or what, but there was one red zone instance there where Colston dominated 3 times in a row. And speaking of domination, 13 minutes difference time of possession, 2 turnovers by the Cardinals to 0 by the Saints. Yeah, if there's a word for it, I would say domination. 1 for 8, third down completion percentage by the Cardinals. Yeah, not a whole lot to add to that, I guess, Chris, huh?
No, not at all.
Yeah, this is pretty cut and dry. So enough about this. Moving over to the first game of the weekend for the AFC. Now, the Colts did prevail 20-3. Officially, at this point, I guess that means you're 1-1. I'm 2-0 here. And then But looking at the stats, you got Manning doing his job. 30 of 44 in passing attempts and completion, 68%, 246 yards, with an interception. Now, here's the thing. The interception in question, of course, was by Ed Reed, the talented safety of the Baltimore Ravens. He fumbles it by a hit underneath his arm from Pierre Garçon. Two Pierres in a row, interesting. Then it's recovered by the Colts.
And that Frenchman didn't give up that play.
Yes, there was no surrender in that Frenchman. Well done, Weasel. So on the turnover stats, I have two by the Ravens and one-ish by the Colts. Speaking of turnovers, Joe Flacco had 20 of 35 on the day, 57%, 189 yards. He had two interceptions. Manning also having two touchdowns on the day, by the way. We go to the running game. Not a whole lot by the Colts, just enough to keep things honest, I suppose. Joseph Addai had 11 for 23, 2.1 a carry. Mike Hart had 6 for 11 for 1.4 a carry. Donald Brown had 6 for 10, about a 1.4 a carry himself. So that was kind of weak. The biggest producer in terms of offense seemed to be Ray Rice. 13 carries, 67 yards, 4.2 a carry. Not bad until he factors in another turnover for the Ravens. Now, there's the Ed Reed interception that got fumbled. Ed Reed actually had two interceptions on the day. And people who were cheering against the Colts were really excited when Manning overthrew this ball. I'm not sure if he had gotten hit or what. And then Ed Reed has it and he's taking it back. And they have great field possession until the flag for pass interference comes out and calls back the interception. And then there's another exchange, one of the touchdowns by the Colts. The Ravens forced third down in the end zone. They're right on the doorstep. Ravens get called for pass interference, third down in the goal line stand. Peyton Manning gets a fresh set of downs, and lo and behold, they score. Look, you give Peyton Manning that many chances, eventually he's going to come through. And we're talking about Peyton Manning. Let's talk about some of the supporting cast. Reggie Wayne had 8 catches for 63 yards and a touchdown. Yeah, Dallas Clark. He had 7 catches for 59. Also recovering the fumble by Ed Reed on that interception. So another big deal there. Austin Colley, 4 catches for 52 yards and a touchdown. And Pierre Garçon with 5 catches for 34 yards. Leading receivers for the Ravens were Derek Mason, 4 catches for 64 yards. And Ray Rice himself again, 9 catches. 60 yards. See, you thought he was just the best producer on the day just because of 67 yards running, but trust me, Ray Rice was all they had. It kind of reminds me of Ronnie Brown for the Dolphins most of the time there. Kind of link it up there. About 7 minutes difference in time of possession by the Colts. Not really a big domination, but the game to me was closer than that 23 score due to all those breaks happening. All those different occurrences was just more adversity that the Ravens would have had to face anyway. In my eyes, the game probably would have ended 10-3 or 13-10 or something like that, still in favor of the Colts overall. Chris, anything to add? All right, cool. He'll have plenty to weigh in on when we start getting the New York team. I promise. Anyways, speaking of people who have plenty to weigh in on, I suppose we have to hear a lot from Weasel as the Vikings played off against the Cowboys. Weasel. Go.
Earlier in the week, Cowboys safety Gerard Sesenbach said, "We'd have to beat ourselves to lose. The way we're playing right now, I don't think we could be. We can be beat." Well, I guess the Cowboys beat themselves.
Thoroughly, actually.
The Vikings at home embarrassed the Cowboys 34-3. Brett Favre was 15 of 24, 62%, 234 yards, 4 touchdowns, no INTs, and sacked 3 times. The receiving game, Sidney Rice. 6 catches for 141 yards, 23.5 average, with 3 touchdowns. Bernard Berrian had 3 for 32. Adrian Peterson had a 19-yard reception. Chester Taylor had 2 for 16. And tight end Vishante Shanko had an 11-yard touchdown reception.
Yeah, are we going to talk about that later?
Yeah, we will.
Okay.
For the running game, Adrian Peterson, 26 rushes for 63 yards, 2.4 average. Offensive Rookie of the Year wide receiver Percy Harvin, 3 for 23, 7.7 average. Chester Taylor had 4 for 23, 5.8 average. For the Cowboys, rough day for Tony Romo. 22 of 35, 62%, 198 yards, no touchdowns, 1 INT. He was sacked 6 times and lost 2 fumbles.
And it's been very interesting to hear the stats on how many times he was hit, too. I mean, the offensive line was without Flozell Adams pretty much the whole game anyway. They were getting tore up by Jared Allen. And even at one point, Jason Garrett, who's getting all this love as an offensive coordinator, is actually drawing up plays where you're trying to get Jason Witten to block Jared Allen. Look, I'm not a genius in any way, shape, form, or fashion. Maybe I'm a great football mind because last week I went 3-1. But I am not a genius in form or fashion. But I know for a fact you don't try to get Jason Witten to block Jared Allen. Look, he's a good blocking tight end, kind of. I get it. But it's not like Jared Allen is a Pro Bowler or anything. Oh, wait. You know, hold on. It's not like he has 44 and a half sacks in the regular season the past 4 years or anything. Oh, wait. No, that's him too. It's not a good plan.
Yeah.
But Jason Garrett's the man, and they don't want to knock on Wade Phillips. Come on, dude. Really?
Come on, man.
Come on, man. There you go. Full circle this thing for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, but there is one way that you can block Jared Allen though. Bring him back in motion, crack back.
Oh, that might have worked.
There
you go.
You just pitch it, you just run outside of him.
Jason Garrett, take note, we will not charge a royalty this time. Unless you do take the Buffalo Bills job, then we'll expect a little kickback. That's okay.
You can also throw in another tackle.
Yeah, but if you have that kind of a set, then it's kind of giving away. If you throw in another tackle, it kind of seems like they know you're going to run, you know? Oh, well, do they have anybody that can do that? They're already down Flozell Adams, and now you want a tackle that's not only going to be able to block Jared Allen. Oh, by the way, you got to catch, too. Maybe on the goal line. I'm a big fan. yeah, they were doing that with Ware. I was just about to say. They were putting Andre Ware in last week. Why the hell not, right?
Speaking of tight end Jason Witten, he had 10 catches for 98 yards, 9.8 average. Miles Austin had 4 for 34. Tight end Martellus Bennett had 3 for 27.
Oh, and by the way, he's not going to be able to block him either, Jason. Just saying.
Felix Jones had 3 for 22, and Patrick Graydon had 2 for 17. In the running game, Felix Jones had 14 rushes for 69 yards.
All right.
4.9 average. Marion Barber, 8 rushes, 14 yards, 1.8 average. Shut down.
Yeah, I stopped doing research after I got... I wrote down all the stats for the major players and got the turnovers 3-0. I'm like, thank you, bye.
And Romo, he didn't get much help from his kicker, Sean Susaham.
Sushi,
who made only 1 of 3 field goals. Now, with only 2 minutes remaining in the game on a 4th-and-3 at the Dallas 11-yard line, with the Vikings up 27-3, do you think it was classless for the Vikings to go for the touchdown, which they successfully converted with Favre throwing the touchdown pass to tight end Vishante Shenko?
Let me rephrase the question for you. Should they have done it, is the question. Is it classless? Look, we could go on days and weeks about this, about how classless it was. My first instinct was like, really? You're doing that? Why?
Yeah.
You know, you're just asking for a cheap shot to be thrown. I mean, you know, Riz and I would be like...
Yeah, that could have happened later in the game.
Exactly. So, you know, aside from the fact that, albeit as good as Favre is doing, he had some excellent throws during that game, well, one of which was the long touchdown pass by Sidney Rice. Both of them weren't... Yeah, both the long ones really weren't that bad. Good throws, but you want to risk this old dude getting put out because someone hits him back in the knee because you wanted one more touchdown that didn't matter anyway? Look, classless? No. And for this reason alone, if it was a game that was a college game where players are allegedly not getting paid, or a high school game, or a semi-pro game, or anything like that where people are not getting paid, yes, it's classless. However, in the NFL, offenses are paid to score. Defenses are paid to do something about it. And I don't care if the game's still in contention or not. As long as both teams are trying to make an effort, they are paid to give us a show.
Yeah, and you know what the only catch was for tight end Vishante Shenko?
That would be that 11-yard touchdown.
Going into the Saints game, that's pretty good to have.
But it could also be another turnaround. Since he doesn't run his mouth during the week.
Ooh,
I mean, they might
just
take a field goal on that, too.
I don't think... There's been a lot worse examples of trash talk than that. The fact that I didn't really hear about it until Weasel mentioned it to me after the game says a lot right there. I mean, how many people really paid attention to that? Yeah, the coach might have gone, oh, you know, oh, they're dissing us playing the district respect card thing in the locker room, but, you know, that wouldn't have gotten much hype. It's the kind of thing where you have, you know, guarantees a win, or you have a Chad Johnson of some sort involved trying to say that he'll change his name back to Chad Johnson if he gets beat by Dale Revis. Yeah, you notice how I said that? Because Dale Revis shut him down?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Segway.
Yeah. Kind of, but okay. no. That was awesome. Anyways, so yes, to complete my segue, we go to the second AFC game of the playoff week, the Jets facing off against the Chargers. Now, many people would have heard me last week go, the Chargers will lose, and be all like, Kyle's just hating on the Chargers. And you would partially be right. When the Chargers would win, as they did in this game, and things were rough, now, I know what you're thinking. You're making an error, Kyle. No, I'm not making an error. I'm committing fraud, because Philip the Fraud Rivers was out in this game in full force. The Jets did prevail 17-14. Mark Sanchez, I got to keep correcting myself,
Sanchez,
because he's the one who's known as Sanchez. Anyway, so the Sanchez went 12 for 23, 57%, 100 yards, did manage a touchdown and an interception, but in the case of the interception, he got walloped. Meanwhile, on the other side, Philip the Fraud had 27 for 40, 68%, 298 yards, a touchdown, and two interceptions, one of them in the fourth quarter.
Both of them came back-to-back, actually.
Was that? Back-to-back drives, yeah.
Two plays.
Yeah, back-to-back plays.
Back-to-back plays. Back-to-back drives.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Back-to-back offense. Well, you gotta say drives. Yeah, okay, I see what you're saying. Back-to-back offensive plays. Yeah. I said drives because there's play occurred between the two, but yeah, no, I got you. Yeah, either way, you're right. I got it. So, but the first pick, I'll even give him a pass on because that was pretty amazing. It bounced up off of Antonio Gates' leg, and Dale Revis somehow made a catch out of it.
You mean off of Vincent Jackson?
Vincent Jackson was?
Yeah, off Vincent Jackson was.
There you go. Well, the reason why it's tough to notice it is because they were moving Dale Revis all over the field covering different players, so I couldn't tell if that was Gates or Jackson on that occasion. Which was kind of what I was saying they should do. I said they should lock him down on Gates all day, but they moved him around. I think that was a good plan. But after that interception, because it did look kind of like it was incomplete, here comes our friend, Philip the Fraud, running up the field like the guy in the Best Buy commercial. Yeah, yeah, except he was going, no, no, it was... I would have flagged him after the third time he pulled that. Okay, and I see you making faces at me that I'm obviously hating on Philip Rivers.
Hey, you don't like
and
him.
And you then decide, you used to agree with this.
I
too.
Know, I
but
know.
But much
I know.
Like with Brett Favre, you're a sellout here too. It's very disappointing. Anyways.
But he should have been flagged on that one.
Absolutely. And then the second interception, I don't really know exactly what possessed him. I think straight overthrew. That was definitely Vincent Jackson that he overthrew this time. Antonio Gates was down the field, not looking. Well, Gates wasn't even looking. So I have a feeling that he wasn't supposed to get the play. He was just supposed to be a decoy. And then, like, Rivers throws it kind of in between the two. And then, you know, oh, well, it ends up in Leonard's hands. Yes, I don't remember if it was Brian Leonard, but...
Well, no, I don't think it's Brian Leonard.
So,
it's just the only white guy on the Jets defense. And then if he followed the block, he would have probably scored a touchdown.
Yeah,
he would
actually,
have followed it outside.
I did see that. Yeah, but that was a little silly.
A white guy.
But since he already recovered a fumble with his helmet off, that was called back. I was going to give him a pass, you know, and which brings me very nicely to the segue of another break that the Chargers got. Jim Leonard, by the way, for those who are wondering. Antonio Gates, and this was definitely Antonio Gates, early in the game, catches the ball, makes two steps, kind of lifts his right arm in the air with the ball in it, and then loses it as he goes down. As Brian Leonard's making the tackle, loses his helmet, dives for the ball and has people jumping all over him, comes up with the ball. But no one will ever know unless they watch the game, because it won't be in the stat line. Why? Oh, well, you know... It wasn't a fumble. Here comes a flag for the Chargers, and the refs overturn it. Even Phil Simms is going, but there's not enough evidence. There's no way you should have overturned that. Now I know when I turn on NFL Network and Mike Piera or whatever his name is, oh well, he made the right call. Yeah, okay. Anyway, so I just thought that was worth mentioning. Everyone's going to talk about something else in the game that occurred that we'll get to later. But just a couple of these things out of the way really quick. And we'll also talk about other challenges. There's a lot to talk about in this game. One of the things worth talking about most certainly was the performance of Sean Green, who had 23 carries for 128 yards, 5.6 a carry with a touchdown. Now, Chris himself said, I'm watching this game and I'm going, where's Thomas Jones? There's no Thomas Jones. Well, he had 14 carries for 41 yards, 2.9 a carry and a touchdown. One of those carries was for about 2 or 3 yards.
2 yards.
That 2 yards that sealed the deal on a 4th-and-1 late in the game so they could just take off. I think it was about 105 or something left on the clock. So they can just take the old V formation and put a knee down on it.
But that Sean Green, that he had a 53-yard touchdown run.
Right.
Did you see that run?
It was pretty flawless up front, and then somehow or another he got behind the linebackers, and they were just chasing
trucked
after a while.
Safety.
Yeah.
Slower, somewhat trucked it and just outran the other safety.
I think that's really how we got through. The blocking was good. The safety came up to make the tackle, and it just wasn't going to happen. That was funny. Yeah, and then for the Chargers running effort, Darren Sproles went 3 carries for 33 yards, about 11 per carry. LaDainian Tomlinson, I don't even have stats here for. Or excuse me, I'm lying. They're right here. Yeah, there we go. Anyways, he has 3 for 11 on running. LaDainian Tomlinson's stats, I'm not even going to announce them because I feel bad.
Aww.
He didn't really have anything.
What about his catches?
What about his catches?
Yeah.
You mean his 3 for 0?
3 for 0?
He had 3 catches, but no.
3 yards.
Tomlinson had 12 carries for 24 yards, 2 yards a carry, so that wasn't so bad. It's the catches that are embarrassing, Chris. You're right. But the Jets were hitting all day. I mean, these stats are complete lack thereof for the Chargers, should say, plenty.
Bring back Lorenzo Neal.
I think he retired, dude. But, quickly for the receiving stats, Darren Sproles, oh, we did that already. Vincent Jackson had 7 catches for 111 yards.
And that acrobat one on the sideline.
Yeah, but minus 15 for a kicking effort. We'll get to that later. And then Antonio Gates had 8 catches for 93 yards as well. Malcolm Floyd and Darren Sproles went 3 catches for 30 yards, while Chris Wilson had a catch for a 13-yard touchdown. There's so much talk in this game, I can't read my notes and the stats. It's getting rough. Top receivers for the Jets, Jericho Cottery had a 3 catches for 25 yards. Braylon Edwards had 2 catches for 41. And Dustin Keller had 3 catches for 19 yards, but most importantly, a touchdown. Now, number of things to catch up on. First of all, there's some other scoring to talk about, or rather, unscoring. 3 times, Nick Kading attempted a field goal. Now, before this, as the announcers made sure to point out, no misses during the regular season for Nick Kading.
For under 40 yards.
Right.
Yeah, 3 of them here.
Yeah.
And according to the same announcer, he hasn't missed an effort under 40 yards in the past 69 attempts. Okay. So, at least one of these could have been used to get the overtime play, but just didn't happen that way. We have our new official Shankopotamus, I think.
Yeah.
I was going to get all over Shane Graham. No, this is your guy. this might be familiar to any other Jets/Chargers fans that it was Nick Kading who missed the kick that put them past the Jets when Drew Brees was still the quarterback last time these two teams faced in the playoffs. Oh, look, another Drew Brees sighting in here. But then there's Vincent Jackson also costing his team 15 yards. Why? Makes a great catch on the outside. Acrobatic, very well worded by Chris, as I said. Leaps up, lands both feet in, and goes out of bounds. Rex Ryan, so sure that it's not a catch, throws the red flag on the field very quickly. He just kind of teeters over and kicks it back over to the sideline. So he got this catch, and the Jets ultimately did lose the challenge. But the effect of the catch was eliminated by the kick, essentially, right?
Huh.
So yeah, that was good. Heads up play.
That was very smart.
Wow.
Yeah, but it's the same thing with the defensive end that went to go headbutt.
Actually, that would be linebacker Sean Phillips.
Yeah.
Right. I was going to get to him too. More BS. More flags drawn. And see, we talked about Philip the Frog throwing those picks. And then, lastly, Coach North Turner, former member of 49er staff, I might add, is faced with a situation after they scored the touchdown that Philip Rivers took in by himself on a quick snap. Really, it wasn't so much that Philip Rivers made a quick move as that the Jets defense was just
standing
too,
there.
Yeah, it was too fat. Exactly. Only two of them were even in a stance. So, right. You know, okay.
If you look, he barely got it across the line anyway.
Yeah, well, you know,
if
hey.
If they were down a position, he might not
have
got in.
I would say he wouldn't have gotten in, but there you go. I mean, you saw it just as eloquently as I did. So then they're set up with the situation afterwards, and they onside kick. Now, I will not be accused of hindsight because I made an effort to write this down before my notes, my feelings on this play. Weasel and Chris, please weigh in. Onside kick. Right call, wrong call.
There was, about 2 minutes, 18 seconds left. They had one timeout.
14, but okay.
One timeout left.
Yep.
Let's say kick it deep. You know they're going to run the ball. They couldn't pass all day long. You know they're going to run.
Mm-hmm.
You get the 2-minute warning. You got the other timeout. You get the ball back with a minute left. You kick it deep. If you can stop them. Onside kick, you're losing 30 yards, 40 yards. You don't get it.
Weasel.
All you have to do is get the kicker in field goal range. Oh, yeah.
I'm glad you made that point because that's part of what I had to say. The onside kick was a bad call for one reason alone. Nate Kading wasn't going to do anything for you, even if the onside attempt was successful. Now, don't get me wrong. The onside kick attempt itself, the kick was fantastic. Unfortunately, Kerry Rose was the one who came down with it and not a Charger. So, on that same ilk, I think even and it's all starting, oh, well, you wouldn't have said that if it had all worked. No. The reason why I wrote in my notes is because even if it did work, I'd have said, this was dumb and here's why, but they got lucky and won, you know. And as it would turn out, I say got lucky and won. That ain't a lock either. You know, we're assuming that they wouldn't be stopped by the Jets. We're assuming the Jets' defense wouldn't cause Philip the Frog to expose himself once again and make the stupid mistake that every criminal does and get busted. Write that down. So, with that...
Yeah, but the Jets kind of helped out the Chargers, too, after the Jets scored on that Sean Green touchdown.
How's that?
They squib-kicked the ball. Why do you squib-kick the ball? I know they're trying to keep it away from Kamari.
Yeah.
But... they've been trying to lop in the ball up there, and last time they kicked it to him, he fumbled the ball.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of a short kick, too, though. That's what I was about to say.
He got it around the 15. No, he got it around the 15. He brought it up to about the 30 when they fumbled,
mm-hmm.
when they forced the fumble. But why do you spin pick it? Because then they brought it into one play there in Jets territory with 3 minutes left in the game.
Well, and with that, yeah, with the way it turned out, they had a pretty good return off of that squib, too, so right. That's what made it they were one play away from Jets territory, sure. You would think, see, it's not so much that the squib kick was a bad call. I wouldn't have done it that way myself, true, but if your coverage is bad, that's not a coaching problem. That's a player problem. And because the coverage was that bad, they set up this good return that you're talking about.
It's not really a bad squib kick, though. Can't get down, the ball gets down there a lot faster than your covering down.
Well, shouldn't you be kicking a squib kick higher is the question.
Yeah, well, squib kick is on the ground. Why is the squib? Pooches up in the air. They should pooch it. Yeah, they should have pooched it.
Yeah,
they should have pooched it. Kicked it up high, so that they like a fair. Almost have to do a fair catch because your defense is right there.
I didn't know there was that big a difference between a pooch and a squib. Excuse me.
Squib means because the ball's gonna go. You don't know where the ball's gonna go.
I need to check my kicker vocabulary book, Chris. Okay, but
But that one, yeah. And also that. Stupid personal foul on the
which
linebacker.
One?
The one on the linebacker.
Yeah, because the one by Vincent Jackson was nice and smart,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah, that was smart. But the linebacker is the one that set up the Dustin Keller touchdown.
That's absolutely right.
Because they gave him a new set of downs inside the 10.
So everyone's going to be down on the kicker. But then there's Philip the Frog. Then there's Sean Phillips, the linebacker. Then there's Vincent Jackson. Then there's Norman Turner's coaching decision. There's a bunch of people who are making mistakes with the Charger. You can't just blame the kicker. And by the way, for everyone who was wondering, even if Rex Ryan going for it on 4th-and-1 right at the end of the game didn't work, I still would have said it was a good decision.
Yeah, I think it was a good decision.
So with that, that'll do for our playoff coverage. This week, I'm 3-1 again. This week, Weasel's 2-2 again. All I can say, pair of great football minds.
Yeah.
Word. Bringing us to the NFC Championship. Now, when it comes to the Vikings facing off against the Saints, can anybody quickly name a defensive front that the Saints have seen that would be as dangerous as the Vikings? Really? Nobody?
No.
How about the Cowboys? You know that game they lost that ended the streak?
Interesting.
I mean, we didn't see them play worth a damn in the Vikings game, but that doesn't mean they didn't exist.
Hmm.
Right? I mean, anybody? So, but in light of that, the only other time they face a
Jets.
That
was more of Sanchez giving New Orleans the game that day.
Exactly. Breeze had terrible stats. That's a good point. Breeze had terrible stats by comparison. The only touchdown they had on offense was a running touchdown. And I believe they had two defensive touchdowns as well, a fumble recovery and an interception return, something like that. So, yeah, they faced two solid defenses, and both times the Saints have plowed it. I'll be real. I still haven't made a decision on this game yet. So I'm going to decide who I'm going to pick as we're talking about it, because to me it's still kind of that close, because here we have the other problem. The Vikings defense hasn't faced a team that's as balanced on offense as the Saints yet. Allegedly the Cowboys were, but they didn't really show up to block anybody. And off the bat, we know that the Vikings struggle against tougher defenses, but the Saints can't claim that, you know. So I'm trying to think quickly, Weasel. Who did the Vikings lose to during the season? Oh, right, the Cardinals. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, they lost to the Cardinals and the Bears late in the season.
Right, that's the one. Well, that Bears thing was a fiasco. But the Cardinal game, they were very balanced on offense as well. Granted, defense had a little to do with it because, you know, Favre had a rough day. Peterson was shut down. But that was a balanced offense that they faced. They found themselves getting down deep quickly and were forced into one dimension, where Favre continued to struggle then behind Peterson getting stuck. I don't know if it's just me, but it seems like Favre's throwing the ball more first before they go to Peterson to use the pass to set up the run. And this is the part where it gets kind of shaky. I can tell you for a fact, you got two balanced offenses facing each other, right? You got two solid sets of special teams facing each other. Percy Harvin, Reggie Bush, although I don't think Reggie Bush is going to do what he did this week with over 200 yards all-purpose with two touchdowns. But, you know, it's not bad. Certainly not the Jets special teams, which is part of the thing that kept the Chargers in the game, too, I might add. So really, what this comes down to me is true, who makes the mistake first will lose football. I put here in my notes, true mistake decision game. And it's not going to necessarily, when I say mistake, I don't mean turnover. I mean, oh shoot, I missed that tackle and I set up this field goal. Oh shoot, I missed this, I dropped this ball so we didn't get the first down that we should have here to keep the chains moving. It's going to be it's going to even be detailed. Because the team that gets up, if there's a team that gets up by two scores in this, two scores in any point in this game, I'm fairly certain that'll be your winner. Wiener. Good job. So, anyways, any thoughts, gentlemen?
My thought is just that pressure on Breeze is the key, because against the Cardinals, I mean, the guy didn't get sacked, and he was just, you know, looking for receivers, second, third options, you know. It was all right.
And like I said, to further illustrate your point, isn't it true that the other time that we were just talking about, he faced the other strong line, the form of the Cowboys? I don't remember how many sacks it was offhand, but I believe it was two or three at least, with a lot of pressure. That's a game they lost.
And, but yeah, so I see that as a key. My pick, at least, is the Vikings winning 31-27.
Yes, no fanhood whatsoever. Weasel's pick is the Vikings. Chris?
Yeah, I agree with you about the two scores. They're up two scores. But I think it's going to be Minnesota because of their defensive line. Same thing, I think, is going to happen to the Saints against the Dolphins game. First half, when Dolphins were in Drew Brees' face all game long, or the first half, Brees couldn't do anything. I think Minnesota is going to come out doing that again, but the difference is they're not going to recover.
Or at least not enough to win the game.
I think Minnesota on this one.
The thing I've said here today that has compelled me to change, or not change, to initiate my pick is the point I made about the defensive line, frankly. Anytime they faced a defensive line with anybody of any reasonable prowess, the Jets, arguably the Falcons, because they've got a good pair of defensive ends, the Cowboys, are all games they struggled or lost. And actually, Miami D isn't terrible, but you struggled against that, too. Ew. If the Saints get up big early, those 14 points, they'll win. I don't think they will. I got the Vikings. There you go. So with that, we head over to the AFC Championship game, which will be the Jets facing off against the Colts. Now, while that other game was tougher to pick, this one wasn't super easy for me. Of course, at quarterback, of course, the passing attack all day belongs to the Colts. The running advantage goes to the Jets, and the defense goes to the Jets as well. But something that should be mentioned definitely in the X-Factor list is something that's very interesting, and it's Bill Polian's fault. One of the teams that rolled over for the Jets to even make the playoffs was the Colts. They think they have a shot. And not just in that, oh, we have a shot because we're really good and we've done really well and we beat the Chargers and the Bengals twice in a row kind of shot, is we've already got a win on our schedule against these guys kind of shot. That's a big deal.
Yeah, and the quarterback that they played against in the second half, they played against a painter.
Curtis, I should have been a painter.
Yes.
Yeah, hey, look, you know that and I know that. But to the players in the locker room, they may know that. It's really easy for them to overlook, because they have that. Now,
they're only down by 7, too, when they pulled the
That's true, too.
So
that's
down by 7 for the Jets, second half.
I had forgotten about that.
Yeah,
it's not that big of a deal.
You know, we hung with them for almost a half. They were only up on us by 7. You know, it's all like Donkey Kong. You know, yeah, the Dolphins were hanging around with them, too, until, you know, they scored two touchdowns at different points in the game with a combined 60 seconds. But, you know, whatever. The big questions are, obviously, will Peyton Manning overcome the onslaught that is the Jets' blitz, or will he have protection problems as he did earlier in his playoff career? It's all about whether he'll get picked up, whether he'll read it. But what really scares me as far as the Jets' point of view is, do they have an answer for Dallas Clark? Yeah, okay, Antonio Gates was kind of handled-ish.
He's no Dallas Clark.
He's a different kind of player. Settle down there, Chief. Dallas Clark is going to be a lot more mobile. Like, okay, you got a big receiver, and yeah, Antonio Gates got them possession yardage, but Dallas Clark can get you that home run ball.
It's different play calling, too.
Yeah.
I mean, with the Chargers, Gates, he's either over the middle or out in the flat. Dallas Clark is all over the field.
That's a true statement.
Dallas Clark's more of a receiver option, why Gates is that tight end. Over the middle, which is open all the time. I'm calling plays, the Chargers running. I'm looking, I'm like, okay, this receiver is running across the middle. They had someone run across the middle every play.
Yeah, pretty much. That's a good point. I know Vincent Jackson himself, he had a couple catches over the middle for the Chargers against the Jets as well. But, and another thing I was thinking of too as I'm putting together my notes, as far as speed rushers go, other than Jason Taylor, who do the Jets really see? Well, now they got Dwight Freeney and Robert Maddox. They definitely ain't seen twin rushers like that I can remember off the bat. And, you know, if that's the case, correct me, go ahead and comment, www.thestudentgame.com. But so that's another issue. Can this big, awesome, great, grand line of the Jets pass protect Sanchez with those guys? Or will it be as simple as them running him the hell over because the Colts are traditionally bad at stopping the run?
Right. You don't need to stop the pass rush, you don't need the pass.
There you go. However, there's one factor and one factor alone that compels me to pick the Colts. Two scores, two different spots in the game, 60 seconds against the Dolphins. Check the stats if you don't believe me, but my pick is the Colts. Weasel.
Run defense for the Colts. That would be the key, and they about stopping containing Peyton Manning during the Jets game against the Chargers. They were really mixing it up against Phillip Rivers, dropping back. But I think Manning's a little bit better at, deciphering that.
A little bit.
So, yeah.
A little bit.
But
ain't nothing fraud about Manning. He's the real deal, kid.
He thought he was going for it.
So I got the Colts winning 17-13.
Chris.
You know, I gotta break the tie. I'm going with the Jets.
No, see, he's going homer on us.
All right.
He's going.
Well, I don't think the Colts stop the run. The Jets don't have an answer for Dallas Clark. Dallas Clark can be open all day long. I don't care what you say. The linebacker's not gonna stay with them. You're gonna have Revis on Reggie Wayne all game long. I mean, if you bring Revis over to cover Dallas Clark, they'll just throw it to Reggie Wayne. But I just think. I mean, you can go back down to time of possession with the Dolphins, even though the Colts still won.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of going to be that game. It's going to be the run, and the Jets will come out fired up.
See, that's the thing. What that game, again, citing that game, what it proves, and it's happened more than once, that's just the one we keep citing because that's the most extreme example. He had the ball for maybe 15 minutes, a little bit more. But he's had games where he's had the ball 20 minutes, 17 minutes. Look, they kept Manning off the field, but he still beat you with what he had. And the Jets don't have the offense to score when they are taking the time off the clock. Pretty much the same problem the Dolphins would end up having that night, settling for field goals on a couple plays. But that's, it's you need to both keep Manning off the field and take care of your business. And a lot of people miss that second part when they do manage to keep Manning off the field. And with that Jets offense, yeah, okay, they can run really good. I know that. But they got to mix it up at some point. There you go. So.
And also, the Jets averaging 16 points a game, giving up.
Yeah, no, that's a big deal. But,
I'm just giving the Jets. I'm staying with my New York team.
So, yes.
Stay with the Vikings. I'll stay with the New York team.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
So, both of our guys are staying with Homer. But hopefully, they won't find themselves saying, "No!" And that'll set us up for the conference championship Sunday. After that, we'll let you know how that went. Talk about how much a waste of time the Pro Bowl is and give you your Super Bowl preview. Till then, I'm Kyle, the student of the game, for my co-host Weasel. Thanking Chris for coming out to record with us tonight. We'll see you then.